Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It would be inexcusable, given the relatively narrow differences when it comes to numbers between the two parties, that we can't get this done.
We do have some honest differences, but I do think we made some progress. But I want to reiterate, there's no agreement on a number, and there's no agreement on the policy writers.
Countdown to a government shutdown, about a day and a half. Countdown to the end of Medicare as we know it. Not yet known. We've been talking to Democratic and Republican members of Congress all week about the Friday night midnight deadline and the longer-term Ryan plan. Yesterday, it was Republican Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. Today, back to our local delegation for Democratic Congressman Anthony Weiner of Brooklyn and Queens. But before we bring him on in his political role, we do want to acknowledge that if this politician thing doesn't work out, Congressman Weiner may have a career in stand-up comedy. And if I had any doubt that Congressman Weiner comes on this show fully armed with technique, listen to this.
The reporters and interviewers love a little positive reinforcement when you're done with your interview. They love a little, they want to be acknowledged. They have a very hard job. They want to know that the interview went well. And so here's a little trick that I started.
I heard your speech.
Right, what's the question?
I got to go, Congressman. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great interview. Aces.
Thanks so much.
Now, I just want you to know, great interview, aces, that's my trademark, so don't steal it.
That from the Congressional Correspondents' Dinner last weekend, where the menu obviously featured roast. And Congressman Weiner, so that's how you do it.
Now you know the tricks. It's a little tougher on radio, I must confess.
Why? Because you can't make those faces?
Exactly. Actually, I probably are still making the faces. You just can't see them.
I guess so. The listeners can't see your disdain for me like they could see it for that Fox News host in that clip. But seriously, where are we now with the government shutdown as you see it?
Well, we seem to be kind of having three conversations. You know, one is the conversation that I think most Americans assume is happening, you know, trying to find middle ground between the Republican position, the Democratic position, with the help of the president. One is a conversation going on within the various caucuses, the Democrats trying to figure out how much we can go along with, and John Boehner trying to figure out what he can do. And what's influencing that second conversation is this big or relatively big noise being made by a relatively small number of Tea Party activists who, frankly, I don't really believe want a deal. I don't believe that they are the ones who are out on the steps of the Capitol yesterday chanting, close it down. I think to some degree that third conversation is the one that's kind of dominating today, because I don't believe that the two sides are far apart on the numbers, so there has to be something broad and ideological that's keeping this from happening. And from my view from the inside, it's just this kind of battle for the soul of the Republican Party, and the Tea Party activists are winning it.
In a way, everyone is all boxed in. Democrats will look like wimps if you give more than $33 billion after Schumer and everybody articulated that number. Republican leaders will look like slaves to the Tea Party if they don't accept $33 billion or something like it. I'm having trouble seeing how a negotiation gets everyone to yes with enough face-saving all around.
Well, what's important usually in a negotiation is if there's some general sense of the outcome that all the sides agree upon. And in this case, it's keeping government running and not having it shut down, the disruption that would cause in the economy and to people's lives. The problem is, I'm not 100% sure, and I'm actually more pessimistic than the president is, that the Republicans really want to get there. I think to some degree, some of them really kind of had this nihilist streak that want to see what will happen when the government shuts down, wants to show the shutdown as like a proof point of their resolve to do whatever it is that they want to do. I mean, if you look at the things that the Republicans want are not budget things. They're things like shutting down NPR, defunding Planned Parenthood, which doesn't get any funds for abortion anyway, stopping the EPA from regulating the environment. I mean, these are ideological fights that they're wrapping up in this short-term debate. I don't believe if you really want a deal, you don't try to mix those things in, since they are kind of black and white issues for a lot of people. A lot of people simply won't go for shutting down the things they want to do.
The larger message that the Republicans and definitely the Tea Party are sending is that out of a budget of several trillion dollars and a deficit of $1.5 trillion, $60 billion is actually a tiny percentage to ask to cut. Do they have a point?
I think they do have a point. If this was, you know, like I said, if this was about a number, I don't think there would be much disagreement. This is also about where you're deriving that number. If they, you know, it's funny, there's an inherent inconsistency. They say, look how big the budget is and how big the deficit is. Why can't we get more? And yet they're refusing to consider anything that's not in this tiny sliver of the budget that you've talked about before, this non-defense discretionary budget, which is, you know, between 12 and 14%. If they really are serious about getting a handle on this, why is it they're proposing today to extend the Department of Defense through the end of the year without a single cut? Why is it that they're refusing to put some of the other programs, some of the other subsidies, some of the revenue things on the table, which could certainly get us, which would certainly be in keeping with their philosophy of, well, it's such a big budget, why can't we get more? But they're right. There are ways to save money in the budget, but we're so far refusing to look at them because of the ideology of the Republicans.
Well, Congressman Ryan released his 10-year deficit reduction plan, as you know, that does look at the broader picture of the whole budget, though it doesn't cut anything from the military. It doesn't raise taxes for more revenue. In fact, it cuts taxes, draining more revenue and increasing the size of the deficit that needs to be closed. But mostly it privatizes Medicare and turns Medicaid into a block grant to the states to save $4 to $6 trillion, depending on what you count. What's your reaction to the Ryan plan? I mean, is he courageous politically for being the first one out with something that tries to tackle the big issue? And what do you think about the content?
Well, he is the first one out. I would dispute there's anything terribly courageous about it. It's effectively, despite all the glowing reviews that some people have said, oh, he's taking on tough issues. In fact, he ducks a lot of the biggest issues. For example, he eliminates the top tax bracket, giving another very large tax cut to millionaires and billionaires. Right there, any serious discussion about reducing long-term debt, you'd have to almost stop at that proposal and say this is not serious. They do take Medicare and basically, starting in a few years, say to senior citizens, when you get sick, here is a voucher to go buy insurance, taking the large buying pool that makes up Medicare that allows us to hold down costs and makes every person for themselves. And most senior citizens are going to find the voucher is not worth the paper it's written on because they can't get health insurance. But the Medicaid piece is the one that's most troubling to those of us in New York, because really all he's doing, he's cutting about $750 billion for Medicaid. It's not as if the bill fairy is going to pay for those health care costs. They're going to be shifted somewhere, and in this case, it's going to be shifted to cities like New York, states like New York, and individual taxpayers, because we still have the same obligation to provide health care for people. We're not going to let people pile up on the streets. So it's going to mean more closed hospitals, higher local taxes everywhere in the country. So I dispute that it's a very courageous document. In fact, it's basically the same kind of political things we've heard from this party for a long time. They're not particularly fond of Medicare. They have real contempt for Medicaid, yet they don't have any ideas on how to reduce costs in health care of their own. So all it's doing is cost shifting.
Well, what about this idea of, since everybody thinks that Medicare, the growth of Medicare, has to be reined in some way, rather than having it as a government single-payer program where it's going to be the government that decides what's going to get reimbursed, what's not, at what levels, what's considered experimental, what's considered best practices, all of that stuff, that you put it out there for a competitive private market system where different insurance companies can offer different kinds of Medicare plans and then let people make their choices. Otherwise, is not the alternative having the government make all these specific decisions on specific procedures and whether to cover them?
Well, let's remember why we have Medicare, and that is because when a health insurance company whose basic structure is to take in as much money as they can, pay out as little as benefits as they can, why do we assume they're going to cover senior citizens at all? We know that the Medicare Act was passed because private insurance companies were saying we don't want to cover seniors. They get sick. It's just simply not good business. And as far as the cost and competitiveness, remember, when you take a large pool of everyone over 65 in the country, you administer it with a program that doesn't need to take profits, has a very low overhead. Last year, the overhead for Medicare was 1.05%. Your average insurance company is in the 15 to 20% range in overhead. So it's certainly not any way to save money. And frankly, the question of competitiveness, you know, we do want to use the marketplace. And the way we use the marketplace in Medicare is we pool all of these seniors together and say, you know what, we're not going to pay a large margin. You're not going to get, you know, wealthy providing service to senior citizens. But since we have such a large, reliable, and efficient pool of buyers, it's going to be a sustaining model. Now, let's remember something. In the Affordable Care Act and so-called Obamacare, not only did we reduce costs by about $500 billion, but we also extended the life expectancy of Medicare in an additional 10 years. There are things that we can do, and in fact, we just did them.
One of the other guests we had in the series this week, Republican Congresswoman Nan Hayworth from just north of New York City, and she's a physician, she was objecting to the cuts in reimbursements to doctors and other providers that the Obama government is currently planning. She says doctors are going to walk away from Medicare, and you're not actually going to have that much choice, even under a single payer, go to whatever doctor you want plan, if doctors feel their time is being reimbursed at such a low rate that they decide not to take on Medicare patients at all. Do you agree that that's a real risk?
I agree that it is a risk that we've had since this was passed, and it was the same exact things the doctors suggested at the time, and you're right. There are some things I think we need to reimburse more for, some things maybe we should reimburse a little less, but this is a constant tension, and even in the Ryan proposal and in the Affordable Care Act, in both cases, there was the so-called doc fix was funded. I do think we do need to keep up with costs for doctors. But in fact, 98% of all physicians accept Medicare because of the deal I just described to you, which is, yes, you don't make giant margins, but it's a very efficient system. If you ask your doctor, would you rather deal with Medicare or the bureaucracy at the insurance companies, they choose Medicare every time because it's that much more efficient. You never hear Medicare denying a payment for a pre-existing condition. You never hear Medicare taking someone's prescription and changing it unilaterally. That's what insurance companies do. But I do agree with the idea. Obviously, as healthcare costs go up, we want to make sure doctors can make a good living serving Medicare patients so they have plenty of choices.
We have a few minutes left with Congressman Anthony Weiner, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens, with the government shutdown a day and a half away, perhaps, and the Ryan 10-year plan now on the table. And I want to play you a clip of Congressman Ryan and get back to the political question of him putting it out there to get shot at by people like you and where this leaves the Democrats. Here's Congressman Ryan.
If that means we're giving our political adversaries a political weapon to use against us, which, by the way, they will have to distort, demagogue, and lie to use it, shame on them. We owe it to the country to give them an honest debate.
So that's what he said as he unveiled the plan. The Democrats, meanwhile, have no long-term deficit reduction plan. The president empowered the Simpson-Bowles Commission, but then did not endorse its recommendations. Are we left with the choice of a far-right Ryan plan versus Democratic abdication?
Well, no, but I think that, to some degree, I agree with Congressman Ryan. We should engage this debate. Democrats should be talking about why Medicare was created, what the alternative is, how the Ryan plan and the Republican ideas for dealing with health care are entirely to disassemble the health care programs that we have and leave entirely up to the province of insurance companies. We should have that debate. Now, the president does have a 10-year plan that is before Congress. It has some things that I have great concerns about. I'm sure things that Mr. Ryan does. The idea he's the only plan out there, I think, is mythology. But one thing I will say about the Ryan plan, and this is a real deficiency, I think, right now in the Democratic leadership. We should embrace this fight. Let's have a full-throated discussion about why Medicare exists. Let's have a discussion about whether or not we should be cutting an additional nearly $1 trillion in taxes for millionaires and billionaires who have gone through this period of remarkable success. Let's talk about a country that the top 2% now have the same income earnings as the bottom 40%. I do think we should engage this debate. The idea it's demagoguery to call Paul Ryan's plan wrong is not demagoguery. It's just a matter of philosophy. But the Democrats aren't leaving the field. But I will say that I don't believe, and I'd like to see this from the president as well, we should be doing a much more full-throated pushback on the things that represent programs for the middle class and those struggling to make it.
All right. Last question on something completely different. Maris poll came out the other day on mayoral contenders for 2013, and it found you in the lead. Actually, Undecided was leading by a good 10 points over you. But among the actual potential human beings who could run, you had the lead by a few points over some of the others. How much, instead of asking you the usual, are you going to run question 2 years out, which is silly, how much do you think it would be a better job for you at this point? You're in a much different position in New York and nationwide than you were during your last mayoral campaign. You've got such a name for yourself now. You're a leader of, you know, part of the Democratic Party. And if you're mayor, then you concern yourself with things like picking up the garbage and clearing away the snow. Is being a congressman from Brooklyn, Queens a better job than being mayor of New York?
Well, I don't know. First of all, I'm challenging Undecided to a debate, so maybe you'll be able to host it.
They're ambivalent about a lot of things.
Look, here's I believe the only job better than the one I have is mayor. But remember, in 2009, it was seriously part of my consideration that in that moment in our American civic life, you know, when I was thinking about running last time, I really did come to a conclusion with health care and stimulus and everything else going on that I was going to throw myself into those things and I could have as much influence. And in fact, the entire world was looking at Washington at that moment, and I did think it was a better place to be. But just like Congressman Lindsey and Congressman Koch and Congressman LaGuardia have come to the conclusion, you know, when I make this decision, it's going to be built around the idea, where can I do the most things? Where can I, with picking up a phone call or a stroke of a pen, solve some of the problems that my neighbors face? I mean, I go to Washington every week, but I never forget the kind of the middle-class families that I represent, those struggling to make it in New York City. There's an enormous, enormous amount that you can do when you're the mayor of the city. But I'm sure you hear candidates or non-candidates say this a lot. I really am so up to my eyeballs with what's going on here in Washington and thinking about how we stop programs like the Ryan program from completely crushing New York's healthcare economy that I've got my hands full, and that's why I'm not, you know, running around like a candidate, because like a lot of New Yorkers, I'm not thinking about 2013 right now. I'm thinking about holding off the Republican onslaught in 2011.
Congressman Anthony Weiner, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I don't get an aces?
Aces.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you missed the beginning of that segment, then you don't get that joke. But we just heard about Paul Ryan's proposal for Medicare, and we've been talking about it all week. And now we want to hear specifically from those of you who use it as patient or provider. If you're over 65 and you're on Medicare, call in and tell us. Are you happy with your Medicare coverage? If you had to redesign Medicare to save money, and everybody thinks we have to reduce the growth in Medicare costs, how would you do it? What do you think works and what doesn't on Medicare, with Medicare? And we also want to hear from doctors or other providers who take Medicare. Give us a call and tell us, do you see ways to improve Medicare and reduce its growth in costs? Are there ways you see to save money within the system and maybe improve the system without the same time? And what do you think of the Ryan proposal? Would you, as a doctor, you if you represent a hospital, a physical therapist, whatever, prefer the Ryan plan? Or if you're a patient on Medicare, if you're just an American 65 or over and you're on Medicare, what do you think of the system? How would you improve it? What works today? And how could we save money on Medicare without privatizing it if you don't want to privatize it? 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692. We'll take your calls right after this.